Oh, I've seen an angel. It called to me.
Have you been drinking the Kool-Aid again?
Well...
Welcome to Cutthroat Cinema Podcast. My name is O.
And I'm L.
And we're your hosts. And in case you couldn't quite get the hint of where we're going, this episode we're going to be talking about Midnight Mass.
Yeah. And it has to do with angels and demons and...
Religion
and preachers and cults. And
a crazy bitch.
Yeah. And we won't go into spoilers yet, even though we love spoilers. We'll hold off a little bit till later on.
Later on.
Yeah. Because we don't want to spoil this for you. This was a really good one. Yeah.
Just quickly, guys, if you want to give us a follow, you can follow me, O the Horror. That's OOHH the Horror.
Well, where?
Oh, sorry.
Hold on.
Oh God, not that again. You can follow me on Instagram. You can follow Elle on Instagram at steel_lens_cinema.
You still never gave yours though.
I said O the Horror.
O the Horror where?
Just O the Horror?
No underscores?
No.
Oh wow.
It's OOHH the Horror.
You know, I'm very jealous of your OOHH the Horror. I mean, as much as I never liked Jeff Jarrett, JEFFJARRET, you got a very cool OOHH. You know,
double H,
very creative.
Thank you. Well, when I was first, not that you guys give a shit, but when I was first kind of deciding on what I wanted my name to be, I was searching for O the Horror, and it was obviously taken.
Yeah,
but I figured, let me see if they have it with the OOHH and the double H,
because
they
do. Oh, the horror.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little more dramatic. And I appreciate it because I am, in fact, dramatic.
You have a thing for the dramatic.
Yeah. And what the fuck is yours?
steel_lens_cinema.
Right.
Yeah, with the program. I have a thing for the theatrical more than the dramatic.
Yeah, you certainly do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Midnight Mass, which is created by the awesome, I wouldn't say underrated anymore. Well, even though maybe slightly, because I still don't think he gets the appreciation he deserves. The great Mike Myers. I mean, Mike Flanagan.
Very funny.
Halloween, Michael Myers.
Get it?
Yeah. Do you know I bleached a Mike Flanagan mask once to use for Halloween, but it didn't work.
Nobody got the joke?
No, they didn't. I tried using it, but I got the joke. Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's enough of that. Yes.
Oh, by the way, they don't make Mike Flanagan masks.
I know. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for clearing that up.
No problemo.
So this story takes place on a small fishing town, very small island.
I love small little towns and islands.
Yes. Like literally almost every episode, I think we've talked about how much you enjoy little towns. This is Crockett Island. And I
double O, why don't you
double O. Just double say, O. Oh. What
the fuck? Why don't you read the tagline, the little summary? Yeah. Right there for you.
Oh, okay, thanks.
I had it ready.
Oh, appreciate it. An isolated island community experiences miraculous events and frightening omens after the arrival of charismatic, mysterious young priest.
Nice.
I have to say, now I haven't seen Bly Manor, so I don't want to say that favorite show so far.
Bly Manor was weak.
It was weak.
Weaker.
It's more of a gothic romance than a horror, so I think that's part of it. I as much as I loved Haunting of Hill House and thought it was so fucking good, there is just something about this show, and I want to say, like, I guess all of his shows, but again, I have not seen Bly Manor, that always sort of leave me with this sense of like existential like crisis.
Yeah.
Where I'm sad but happy, but like appreciate, like I am so overwhelmed with emotion after I finish one of his shows.
Bly Manor, you haven't watched it, but it definitely didn't leave me with like any sort of happiness. That one was definitely like more like
just sad.
Yeah, like depressed, like, you know, this terrible illusion of like love and loss and just like bleh. And it was just It was definitely,
like his shows do that in general.
Yeah, but it was the weakest of the three for sure. I enjoyed all of them, and it was after watching this, it was like a real toss up with this and Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah,
and they're two different types of shows, right? Haunting of Hill House is just let it go.
We're trying to get a fly. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's in the studio here, and it's like
the episode of Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Oh, that was an overrated shit. Everybody hates that episode.
It's not overrated. If everybody.
Oh, is
it?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Some losers praise it like it's the greatest. Didn't it win some fucking award?
No, Ozymandias did though.
Oh, Ozymandias did. Yeah. Oh, okay. But stop throwing me off with fucking trying to kill that fly. Yeah, they're two totally different shows because they're both
categorized. Show.
Yeah, with those two, my two favorites. Oh, okay. In the sense that they're both categorized as horror, but this show is a different type of horror.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, wow, I really like both of them. I think I like Haunting of Hill House better, but this show definitely left its mark or stain on me. And
I love heavily.
And it's probably now become my favorite of the two. Well, the three.
Okay.
But
before we continue, yeah. I just have to point out one important thing. The guy who plays Father Paul in this show, Hamish Linklater.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But
sir, you deserve to be in everything.
Yeah.
You are one of the fucking finest actors I've seen in forever. Like, truly, I hope that this show doing well. I hope that his career, which is varied, like he's had a career, he's been in shows, but he is so good in this show.
Yeah, but he's known for Battleship, right?
Yeah, I think he's gonna be known for this now. Like,
well,
this
thank goodness, yeah. Because
he's fucking great.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of stuff under his belt, but nothing of significance, I believe. So, I mean, now he's in The Stand, but nobody watches that shit. So, at least
so
I.
So mean.
It's true. Anyone that actually appreciates good television.
So wait, I was
criticizes
gonna
say, that show.
That's one thing I was gonna say about this show. It felt like the bones of it felt like it could have easily taken place in Derry or Castle Rock. Like it felt very Stephen King ish. Without all the stupid Stephen King like bits in it. Huh. I like Stephen King stories, but anyone who's a fan of his can at the very least know, hey, sometimes he puts stupid shit in his stories.
That's not true. Some people adore him.
I mean, and they think he could do no wrong, I'm sure. But any
you don't have to bring
logical
up.
Person can think that. But no, I'm bringing it up because I'm trying to fucking say what it felt like. Like that, if I had to compare it to something, it felt like one of those stories that, again, takes place in a small town. You have a small group of people getting kind of like maybe even missed vibes in terms of a hyper religious zealot.
Bev is like what's her face in
yeah Bev you know? that's who she reminded me of.
It also seems like
she was terrible.
Also seems like a
I mean
cult.
She was great
but also seems like a cult.
so there's a lot to this show and I don't really want to we're gonna go into spoilers a little later in the episode. Mm-hmm. Like big spoilers, we'll probably sprinkle in some spoilers as we go. That being said, I want to talk about the show and how it made me like feel and what, like why I think it's better than like most things on TV right now. But but eventually we're going to get into the spoilers of the show. But first I just wanted to just like say what an incredible show this was.
I feel this show is like, it's unfortunate that I think it was literally like put on at the same time as a Squid Game.
Yes. Yeah, so
right?
Now it's getting Disney. Like, which is sick. Cause
mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. I hear Squid Game's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I
haven't
watched
it
yet. I'm going to watch it for sure.
But it's one of those things where you know that a show like this would have done extremely well. I'm assuming it did do well when it came out.
I think it was in like, it was like in the top 10. It was up there on the Netflix you know, most watched or whatever.
And then Squid Game came out, and then it was just like nobody was talking about it
anymore. Nobody was talking about it. I don't think really people talked about it much.
I think it came out like because it came out within a few days of each other.
Yeah, and the few people that like really appreciate like horror will watch it, and like Mike Flanagan fans will watch it, but I don't think it's getting the attention it really needs to get. Like I feel even Bly Manor got more people talking about it than
Bly Manor had a lot of people talking about
it. And I think a problem with this show, which I know it's going to be a problem regardless, even if it was getting attention, it is dialogue heavy.
Okay. So that's the thing though. Mike Flanagan's shows are dialogue heavy.
Yeah.
I think maybe not so much with the first show he did, so much with the Haunting Hill House. That it was a lot of visuals, the ghost aspect. I know I had heard when Bly Manor first came out, because it was considered more of a gothic romance, that it did focus more on like talking. But this one, I would have to say, felt like the heaviest of what I've seen in terms of dialogue. It's heavy dialogue. The priests, you know, Father Paul's like sermons are heavy. The conversations they have with each other.
The sermons are heavy, but even if I would say if you're not religious, they really pull you in. Like you, one, because he's a great actor and
he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I cannot get over how good he is. First of all, let's get something straight. Everybody in the show is fantastic.
Yes.
Everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody plays their roles beautifully. I don't think there was a wasted character. I couldn't tell you. Like I think everybody was cast perfectly too.
I have a few that I thought were way better or a little like you know, either underutilized or
I feel like Annabeth Gish maybe could have been a little bit better. The doctor.
Yes.
Like she just not that I want to say she didn't have an important part in the show, because she did.
She did towards the end.
But it just, I don't know. I guess maybe like the first half, she was just the town doctor, you know?
And then all of a sudden, like a bomb gets dropped and you're like, oh. And then all of a sudden she has more significance, but she was a kind of little.
Yeah, like I feel like maybe, but again, it's a.
There's a lot of people in the show.
There's a lot of people, right.
And to spread that over, seven episodes?
Only seven.
Yeah.
There's only seven episodes. Mm-hmm. Which I think is less than the previous shows.
I don't remember. But this is like another, I appreciate for not spreading it out and wasting time.
Yes.
And wasting resources, you know? Because it's like, can you really spread out a show like this? And if you did, would you really just be, you know, thinning it out and
putting a lot of filler in the episodes?
How much more filler can you do? And I think this really was like a perfect amount of episodes. One more episode.
Oh, I agree.
What would you really have been able to do other than just give us more, you know, story on certain characters?
But the backs, like, I think the way the story unfolds, though, is there really isn't a lot of fat to the story. Everything you see on the show, you need to see to establish the town, establish the people in it, establish what happens to the main character, Riley, which he's the main character, but he's only the main character for like the first four or five episodes. Mm-hmm. And then it switches perspectives.
I
didn't spoil anything. I just said it switched. Stop being a bitch. Hit the booze.
Hold on. And you kind of got a sense that you could already feel it shifting at a certain point.
Yeah.
That he wasn't necessarily the main actor, the main character, the main protagonist in the story.
I can't remember the word for the ensemble. So like it's an ensemble cast, right?
Yes.
So he's maybe not the main character, but he's the main focus for the first few episodes.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
And then there's a kind of like a shift going on as one of the background characters start to.
I wouldn't even say background characters because
they weren't a background character, but he was definitely more of the story and they were more of the, you know, they get introduced. They're not really in it as much. And that's maybe a little bit of the problem in the show. Like characters kind of come in and out and then disappear for a little bit, but that's because there's so many people. And let's be honest, in a way we have, Father Paul, who's kind of really the main character.
Yeah, I guess technically. Well, that's the thing. So you're, it's not like each episode focuses on a different character, and it's not like a single event where you get the focus of different characters of that same event. It really is a story of the over the course of what you assume is maybe like a couple of weeks, and what happens to the people in this town, and what they, again, without spoilers, you get a clear sense of what everybody in this town is going through. And yes, the show is exposition heavy, but it sort of has to be, because the main character, Riley, has been away for 4 years. He's come back to the town. And during that time, things have happened in the town. And his mom in the first episode kind of explains everything that's been going on. And from there is where things unfold. The beginning of the episode shows why he went away for 4 years. And again, we're going to get into all of that. Now, you had mentioned earlier that this felt like cultish to you, right?
Yes, some of it definitely felt cultish in the sense of how, though he's a preacher.
Well, he's handsome there. Hamish.
Hamish.
Yeah.
How a preacher can entice a whole town to do. I mean, are we going into spoilers yet? Or are we going to still talk a little bit?
We can kind of like, well, spoil a few things, and then we'll into the deep dive of the spoilers.
I mean, the town is, at the start of it, it's only a few people attending the church. Because it used to be
literally like maybe 20.
Is it even 20? I don't even remember. There's that many people.
Because of like the families that still go.
Yeah,
like,
the families that still go. I don't even think it was that many, actually. I don't really think that there was that many. I believe it was actually a little less, but I could be wrong. And I talk about cult-like mentality, not saying that the church is cult-like, just talking about podcasts I've listened to and just stuff I've read in history, like Jim Jones and Heaven's Gate and things like stories like that. I can't remember one of the other ones, what they were called, but just like former pastors or preachers who have left the church and have been able to make people believe that they're like Jesus reincarnated, falsifying miracles, or something happens in this, which is a little bit of a spoiler. A miracle happens. I won't even say what. And sooner or later, not just this miracle, but people start to, you read it in the tagline, that little miracles start to happen.
Yeah.
And people start to believe and join the church. In cults, people believe these ex-preachers or parish leaders or...
they start with a small community,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and
they,
I mean, a lot of them are excommunicated from the church. They're not even, they don't even belong to the church anymore. And they make people believe that they're some sort of reincarnation or God speaks directly to them. And they get people to hand over their homes, their money, their social security checks, their children even.
So...
And scenes, hold on, I'm sorry. Scenes in this, it never gets to that extent. But later in the episode, when we get into spoilers, stuff starts to happen where people want to believe so much, or they start to see things that they're willing literally to give over so much of themselves that it almost becomes cult-like. And I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Flanagan, obviously, you know, he's very intelligent, he knows a lot of stuff, used some of that history in real life, like I said, from, what was it, Jamestown,
Jonestown,
where the, what, over 900 people, people killed themselves. And the
not
people
just killed themselves.
Yeah, they killed people who didn't want to kill themselves.
Let's just talk a little bit about Screen Rant, who I have an issue with anyway, but like, we'll get into that later. Yeah. Screen Rant
didn't
put up an article.
Didn't they steal people's stuff?
They deleted the video, but they had verbatim done a video from CZ's World.
I
about
like him.
The Invisible
yeah, he's really cool.
Man, the new one, which, yeah, funny enough, that actor in The Invisible Man, is it The Invisible Man?
Yeah, wasn't it called The Invisible Man?
Isn't it called
I
literally can't remember.
Yeah.
That actor is in the first season of, is in Haunting Hill House. He's the drug addict brother.
Oh, really?
So we're coming all around here to Mike Flanagan shows. But they had stolen in like an entire video about the breakdown of that. Like even using the same clips, and then CZ's World called them out, and then they deleted the video. Meanwhile, CZ's World has a few hundred thousand. They have like a million something.
Yeah.
So my issue is that. And then...
I don't think that's the only time they've done that.
They've
either.
Done it plenty mm-hmm. of times. So as we were scrolling through getting stuff ready for Midnight Mass, I see an article from them where it says, how Midnight Mass uses... a tragedy from, and it's like everybody knows the fucking tragedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, and then they put a picture of like Jim Jones in the background. But I'm like, all right, come on, mm-hmm. Screen Rant. We got it. Like, no need to like yank all the fuck. I'm whatever.
Well, did they do that when the movie The Sacrament came out? Because that was like literally Jonestown.
I don't think anybody's even heard of that movie.
I did it last year for 31 Days of Horror.
I know you did it, but it doesn't mean that everybody knows
that
it.
That was a found footage. And I highly recommend if you want to watch something uncomfortable and disturbing, you watch The Sacrament.
So here's my thing.
That was disturbing. I'm sure.
Midnight Mass, as much as I like it, and as much as I can see maybe the cult aspects of it, especially in the church scene at the end. And again, we'll get to that. Because, hoo boy, there are a lot of things in this show that don't scream cult to me, but do scream extremism. And that's a focus, I think, that not a lot of people are making the connection to.
There's so also, Hang on.
You said your piece. Let me fucking say mine. No.
Attitude?
Mr. You was interrupting me. Meanwhile, I can't get a fucking thought out. The reason I think...
I'm the captain now.
Yeah. That should have been the other thing.
That should be.
But extremism, right? You have this small group of people. I would guess they're Catholic or Christian or whatever mm-hmm. sect that is. And they're intensely devoted to their preacher, right? This small, small group of people who... Now, because there's this faith healing and these miracles happening and these omens going on, now more people in the town, pretty much all the people in the town, have made it their mission to be part of this, not just religion, this church.
This family,
this mm-hmm. particular group. And there's correlation of like, you can believe in God and what he's done for you, or you can choose not to believe it. But when it gets to the point of like alienating the people around you, not wanting to help others because you have to focus on your group, and there's this like, I think that's the sense of extremism that maybe Mike Flanagan was going for, and how quickly those sects can be portions of a...
That sounds like a dirty text message.
Yes. It's the portions of those religions. Yeah, thank you. That you want to try to avoid. They even have the sheriff in the town who's Muslim. He praises Allah. He talks about how he became a cop in New York City, specifically after the 9/11 attacks happened, because he was so upset by what extremists had done. And let's be fair, that's what it was. It was extremists. It wasn't all of, you know, Islam. It wasn't anything like that. And I think there's something to be said about that correlation of this extreme group who are now like believing in a pastor more than their God. You know what I mean?
Well, it also goes to show how dangerous being misguided can be.
How dangerous being misguided can be, but also how dangerous believing in a person can be instead of a higher power.
But something we didn't mention also is that, well, are we going a little spoil now? You know, yeah, God,
24-minute mark. I think we're safe to go into spoilers.
What we didn't talk about, that there's obviously a supernatural aspect to this.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so much that you can unfold in this show that if we did this, we really would be here for 3 hours.
You know, an angel spoke to him.
Right, so that's part of the point of extremism mm-hmm. that I wanted to get to. Using the text, perverting the text to fit your idea of what you want to portray to these people, right? Mm-hmm. So Bev Keen,
she is the true...
She's the pink chick from Harry Potter. What's her name?
The pink chick?
Yeah. The one...
Oh, you mean like the portrayal of it.
Yeah, what's her name?
Oh, from season five, episode
movie five,
Order of the Phoenix. She's I was about to say like
Trunchbull.
I was about to say the Trunchbull.
That's what I keep thinking too, but it's not that. What the fuck is her name?
No cheating. I don't remember
totally,
her name.
Totally cheating. Hold on. Umbridge.
I didn't cheat.
Yes. She's definitely.
Yes.
She's definitely the Umbridge of this show.
She's more vile though. This Bev Keane is truly. She,
debatable.
Because remember, there's the evil that's pure evil, like devil like supernatural, demonic evil, and then there's the human evil.
Yeah.
So the evil like that, like the evil of the soul, the evil of the mind and body. She portrays that. She's that incarnated. So there's, which is something I appreciate about this show.
I appreciate this show and its nuances. Again, we talk about extremism. Bev Keane is the epitome of extremism. She is the one who like twists the words in the Bible to fit what the preacher is going through. The supernatural portion of it.
She even corrupts the preacher
a little bit.
When he even begins to question his faith and his resurrection, so to speak, it's Bev Keane that guides him and convinces him, mm-hmm. because he does
and
something.
Then she starts to corrupt the other people.
The other people
the
and make them believe, so to speak.
Because the priest truly believes at the start of this that he's helping. Mm-hmm. And yes, does he get drawn into the dark side that even his patrons are like, ooh, or a former patron is mm-hmm. is like, this is not the person I knew. This is not the person who led this congregation. Like I'm not okay with this. Which mm-hmm. again, we're going to get into the spoilers of it, but we're trying to push you guys to watch this show because it's so fucking good. And we don't want to give you spoilers off the bat.
Jump away if you haven't watched, because you should try
to go watch it. It's we'll wait a day and a half. That's how long it took for me to watch it.
Yeah. You binged the shit out of it. Basically.
I started that shit at 5 at 10 o'clock. I was like, all right, I got to go to sleep. And then I watched the next 2 episodes the following morning.
I
woke up.
I basically did it in like 2 or 3 days also.
Yeah, no. I was like, I need it.
That's what I admired about this show, that even when Father Paul was losing, so to speak, faith, she continued to like corrupt him in a way. Made him believe. But I find it also, when we were talking about there was only a small amount of people in the church, you have to remember that before Father Paul showed up, there was the elderly preacher.
The Monsignor.
Who was in his 80s, slightly losing his mind, because they talk about how people used to see him wandering on the beach with his hat and his cloak. And kind of, you know, in and out of, I think they said he had dementia, and he was, you know, sometimes he was there and sometimes he was not there in his sanity. And clearly that was making people lose probably like faith in going to the church, that he couldn't really give a sermon as well as he would stumble,
but not even just that. You find out in the town that there is, so it's a fisherman's town. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had an oil spill. And I think technically what they're referring to
is the one that actually
is
happened.
The one that actually happened.
Yeah, that happened
like
years
BP
ago. BP,
oil spill?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and,
where's Superman when you need him? Remember Superman 3, the oil spill that he caused from the boat?
Anyway, so the
people committed suicide. I remember people
really.
Yeah, I remember reading stories like someone had killed himself because of it.
Oh,
had
wow.
Lost his business. I'm sure that wasn't the only story that got out there. Remember the media suppresses news.
Couldn't help himself. So,
well, it's true.
You're not wrong. And that's mm-hmm. the thing. There's also like an element of like, how much should you believe? Just from like word of mouth, how much did you believe of even what you're being shown? Because you're still not getting the full story.
Of course.
And that's part of this as well, as you find mm-hmm. out later. The blood of God, the wine, mm-hmm. and that's being hidden from the... Oh, man, there's so also, much to unravel yeah. with this fucking show, but man.
Back to the town, like, they also talk about how before the oil spill, there was way more... The population was much higher. People left. Now they're just down to a couple hundred people.
Like just about over 100 people, yeah, like I want to say.
I think 123 or 183 or something.
Yeah, they give, like, I think a somewhat specific amount.
Yeah.
But there used to be... But even Riley's mom... Who was so sweet in the show. Like, she's just one of the, like, nicest characters. She even talks to her son when he comes back from where he was. She tells him about, you know, the oil spill that happened, the fact that a ton of people started to sell and just leave the town because they couldn't be fishermen anymore. People eventually even stopped selling because nobody was coming to move into the town because they just wanted to be able to leave and live a regular life outside of this town. Because relying on this one field, it's like, again, this is why it gave me Stephen King vibes. Do you remember the first season of Castle Rock?
Yes.
The prison, mm-hmm. where they're like, most people in this town work for the prison.
For the prison.
Mm-hmm. And if this prison shut down, everybody in the town would be fucked. That's essentially yes. what the feeling I got for that. And I feel like that's a really interesting dynamic to see. It's eventually going to become a ghost town, foreshadowing there. Mm-hmm. And... And it's just one of those things where those towns exist.
Yes.
There are towns that if one bridge or road gets destroyed, you're fucked as far as getting in and out of the town.
Well, the town in this town, you can only go in by boat.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You can only, they say mainland, so you can mm-hmm. only go to the mainland mm-hmm. by boat. And
so... Who's our main character? One of them. We have Riley Flynn, correct?
We have Riley Flynn.
And we have Erin Green, who are technically probably the two main characters. Have the most dialogue in the show. And we'll start talking about them.
Yeah. Let's start with Riley, because I think that's the first person we see when the show starts.
Yes, it opens up with...
quick side note. Kate Siegel, I love you.
Yes, Kate. Mm-hmm.
I love you so much. I know you're married to Mike Flanagan, and I know I'm married too, but just know that I love you so much. Anyway,
yeah, she's hot.
I love her. Yeah. So she is so fucking good in every single thing she's in. Granted, mm-hmm. so not to shit on other directors and their wives, but I'm about to.
But she's about to.
But I'm about to. So last time we were talking
she's
about.
She's about to be like all There you go.
There you go.
Go ahead.
There's my evil laugh.
Yeah.
she is. Genuinely like a super talented actress. I mean, yes, she is absolutely beautiful, right? But she's super talented. Like, I can't, when she conveys, like, there's a speech she gives to Riley about like what happens after death, and like that's one of the things that left me feeling like
that was a long scene, that was like a deep scene.
Your heart deep. Felt I mean mine did
is that what you do like this?
Yes. Like, I could feel my heart beating out of my chest, like, after that scene, explaining what she feels, her daughter. Oh, my God, I can't.
That's where people watching this go, I like American Horror Story better.
Yeah, like, there's more kills than yeah, it's scary.
There's, like, aliens who just, like, fuck, like, white-faced vampires, and that's, like, so much better.
Meanwhile, there's just so many layers. And
there's, like, people who just, like, dress up in black latex and, like, fuck pregnant moms, and it's just, like, so much cooler.
You're right. You doing okay?
Yeah.
Anywho,
I fucking hate American Horror Story.
Oh, you mentioned that last time.
I'm taking a film class right now, yeah. And like horror topic came up, mm-hmm. and the amount of people who just like say who they're not into horror, but then when they list stuff that's scary, I'm just like, you make me sick. They're like, oh my God, like my favorite movie is Annabelle, and I'm so scared of Annabelle, and it's just such a great movie, and then they're trying to like dissect it, and I'm just like,
it's Annabelle, really?
It's fucking Annabelle. And like it's movies like Annabelle that are like the great horror, and I'm like, Annabelle though, like, okay. I mean, at least talk like maybe The Conjuring if you really want to
shut up. What? For a second, yeah. I was gonna say shut up for a second.
Oh, okay, I'll shut up now,
thank you. Mm-hmm. The reason I think we tend to stray away from those movies now, because mm-hmm. when I was younger, yeah, like I was totally like, oh yeah,
you were a kid though.
But my point is that
you're a teenager. These people are like
now,
college students.
Existential horror is where it's at for me. And I think this is why I like this show so much, because mm-hmm. it does give you that like impending like doom kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I can't handle it. Sometimes I cannot watch shows like that.
I literally watched Annabelle and Annabelle Creations, I think last year or early, like, I don't remember. Like, shit, there's been nothing to watch. Yeah. Like, when you're watching things and you just want to put on a horror. And I'm just like, one, how predictable, right? And then it's just like, this is like, oh. And I literally wrote that. I said, I can't watch these shows because they're just blah. And I mean that in a, I guess in the most like respectful way to like the people who create them. I don't mean it in a mean way, but holy shit. And the fact that people are just like, oh, Annabelle just was so scary. It just fucking sits there, you know, and then it just moves and then some fucking like demon jumps out of nowhere. Like it's just for a jump scare.
What I was saying though is
aren't they making another one?
Yeah, probably. They're making a bunch from The Conjuring.
And I have no fucking interest in the Lost Boys remake. Can I mention that?
Yeah, I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't give a shit.
How cool was that movie on the screen outside?
It was beautiful. Oh my God. I loved it.
I fucking love the Lost Boys.
Me too.
We gotta do Near Dark outside.
So I'm glad you brought up the Lost Boys. Because I was having a conversation with our nephew about Midnight Mass. And spoiler for the show, there's a vampire in it. There's a fucking vampire. And
how predictable for us though.
What do you mean?
I knew it was a vampire from the minute the chest came out.
The minute the chest came out?
Yeah. When there was the chest.
Oh, right.
Something was knocking on it. Dracula, he travels through a chest in the old stories.
So that's also very Stephen King thing that I was thinking.
It's also
Knight Rider, Night Flyer. That Stephen King like short story.
I never heard of
it. It's a Stephen King story.
Okay.
And it's about a vampire who travels via casket and airplanes at night.
All right. That's also like a ripoff of old school.
But The reason I really enjoyed like that aspect of it is, again, the twisted interpretation of what, and they're right. Every time someone talks about seeing an angel in the Bible, They're terrified. They're scared. And then eventually, because of what the angel does, they're like overcome by some sort of peace, right? Mm-hmm. That's the case here with the vampire. When you find out what it's capable of, what it is. I thought the design for the vampire was beautiful.
I thought it was awesome. I love, well, you don't know at the beginning what it is.
You think we should just get into the like how the story starts and then where to go from there?
I mean, I in reality, I don't want to just go, I don't feel like it's necessary to go over each and every piece of it.
I
kind of want people to really watch it. So, I mean, I know we're like giving away stuff, but
yeah,
we could kind of like talk about how Father Paul like gets introduced to this Nosferatu like vampire. I mean, I could talk about like how he came across of it in a cave.
I think there's so much in the story that I don't even know how to describe it. There's so much in the story that is important to the story that if we gave it a breakdown or just talked about it, there'd be so much that's missed out on. Yeah,
it's 7 episodes that I think they were over an hour each. They're like an hour five.
Hour five, hour 10, yeah, depending on the episode.
So there's a lot to break down. So I don't think it's necessary to go into detail like that. I mean, like you said, like Father Paul shows up. The opening, we never went into it. Like Riley kills someone in a drunken car accident.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, because this show is about forgiveness and redemption, right?
Redemption, forgiveness, personal accountability is a big portion of the show.
And like he's tormented in a way, like by the ghost in his own head, right?
Yeah.
Of the girl he killed, he does jail time.
I did kind of hear that the way that they portray the girl in it was
like Bly Manor.
Yeah.
Exactly like Bly Manor. Mm-hmm.
I kept on hearing comparisons about the ghost, and I was like, is it because of that? Like,
the minute I saw it, I was like, is he just doing Bly Manor? It's a little different, but I was like, wow, this is kind of like Bly Manor, but it's not a reoccurring thing like the way it was in Bly Manor. Like in Bly Manor, I think she saw him constantly.
Well, he sees her every single night before, because the girl's like 17, she's a kid, and he's like a yuppie business guy who left the island. He gets into the car wreck, he takes a plea deal of like 4 to 10 years and then gets out in 4 because
he does the minimum time.
The minimum time.
And he's one of the people who didn't believe in like the faith of the island, like the religious aspect of the island. He believed it at the beginning, and then something happens.
He kills someone.
No, there was also...
No. That's literally the only reason he said that he lost his faith. When he was in jail, he read every book, every religion. He looked outside, and he just couldn't understand why God couldn't save this girl's life.
Something also about a story the preacher told him when he was younger, when he was a altar boy, that made him... something about him bringing him a dead rat or something. I remember there being...
It wasn't like the dead rat thing. And that's not a matter of him losing his faith.
No, like
that was him having faith in the priest and in God and in whatever. Mm. And the only reason he lost faith, the only reason he became an atheist was because of
the girl dying. Yeah. Like that God didn't save her. Yeah. God let it happen that he killed her. Well, obviously, I mean that, but I feel like he already had left the island.
He left the island, but he was still like they purposely show him driving a car that has one of those like fish things on it. Like, you know what I'm talking? I'm terrible. I grew up Catholic too, and I can't fucking remember what it's called. But one of those like fish things on the car. And then like when he's sitting there and he's like, she can't be dead. And he starts reciting the Our Father.
Yeah. Yeah.
Praying. He still believes at that point. He still heavily believes at that point.
The guy makes a comment towards him.
Yeah. Ask God why they always kill the kids and not the drunks.
And saves the drunks. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they always walk away with a scratch, right? Like he at that point is still very much believes, even when you see him in his first night in jail, which again, very clean and concise on how they start the show. They don't like linger on the trial. They don't.
Just from that to the jail cell, basically.
Yeah, to the court. You hear his sentence, and then jail, right?
And his mom is reaching out to him.
First night in jail, he has the Bible, he's reading it, and then once he gets out, like, you learn from there that he's lost his faith, and you know why. It's because of the situation that he found himself in. Yeah.
And his father hates him.
I don't think his father hates him. I think
he's disappointed in him.
He's disappointed. He maybe resents him a little bit because
he resents him a lot.
But he says it in the show.
Yeah.
And I think that's another part of the show that people don't really talk about. There's so much like growth in the show. Not just from the characters you'd expect to. The people who don't grow, who don't move on past like their insecurities or their hatred or their, you know, the little things that like everybody holds on to.
They're corrupted.
Yeah, but like there is so much growth. There's the growth with Riley, right? With believing in a higher power again. There's the growth with his dad, who learns to resent his son a little less and believe in him and love him.
Yeah, but then when he goes missing right away, his dad just like
he thinks he goes on a bender. But that's anger. That's not. That's a completely normal, you know, thing. And it's just.
Well then, all right. Well then, you have Aaron, right?
Aaron, who was.
Another one who left the island and ended up right back where she started.
Yeah.
So like the people who wanted to leave from a younger age, who didn't want to be stuck there, all ended up returning.
Yeah.
She was in an abusive marriage and she came back pregnant.
Yeah.
I found her story to be excellent as well.
Yep.
And most notably that she was still going to church. She still had like faith, which did we discuss the blood drinking, right?
Not yet.
Okay.
We haven't really gotten into anything about the show.
So, but she comes back to the island pregnant. Riley sees her. They were obviously a thing.
Yeah, they're boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yes, they had a relationship.
Before she left, because she left first.
Yes. I don't think just a boyfriend, girlfriend. I think they were clearly in love in their youth. And then she just left the island.
She wanted to get away from her mother.
Who was extremely abusive.
An alcoholic and abusive. Mm-hmm.
Who was a teacher. Mm-hmm. And not just a extremely abusive, implying that, I think she makes a reference about clipping her wings.
Like she was emotionally, physically, verbally abusive.
Yes. I think she mentally, was physically, and emotionally.
Right. Mm-hmm. She was everything but sexually abusive toward her daughter. Like, she was just an absolute monster toward her.
She was like Carrie's mom.
Yeah. And, you know, except Carrie's mom wasn't an alcoholic.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's just...
But she was religious. She was, like, I wouldn't be surprised if she locked her in a closet.
Wouldn't be. Oh, are you making Stephen King references now, Mr. Stephen King? But yeah, it's... Exactly.
The movie was better than the book.
Yes, it was. but no, I really... There's also, like, the patterns, right? You try to get away from the town. You know, try your hardest to be separated from it. And what happens? You find yourself back there.
You can always go home again.
Yeah. and that's the case with these characters, especially with these two main characters. Mm-hmm. For Erin, I think she left because she knew that he wouldn't leave. Because at one point during the show, he's like, oh, I have to go. He goes, I have to go meet my parents for dinner. And she's like, oh, wow. She's like, it's like we're in high school again. Yeah. You leaving because you had to make sure you were home before a certain time. So, like, you can kind of see where their whole trajectory of their life, maybe if they had left together, things would have been different. Like,
I found it cute when Riley is in his old bedroom and he's staring out the window and he sees his little bro climbing out the window to sneak out.
And he just waves at him.
Yeah. It was a cute scene.
It's a very cute scene. This show, again, just layers and, like, the family dynamic when a kid returns home after being gone for so long, after going through something like they went through. It's just...
So we have, I think, maybe two other important characters. One of them is Lisa.
They're all important.
Well, I mean, like, that, like, have, like, major impact later on in the story. Who's the handicapped girl. She's the daughter of the mayor. And she was paralyzed by a stray bullet.
From the town drunk.
Joe, who's always ends up in Sharif's little jail cell, which is in, like, a store.
Yeah. So Sheriff Hazan is called Sharif by the town drunk. But later on, it's implied that, like, other people call him that because mm-hmm. they're racist.
They're racist.
He's Muslim. Mm-hmm. And they call his, like, the group of kids call his son Aladdin because they're fucking dicks, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's a small, predominantly white Catholic town.
Riley's brother is like, no, he's cool. Let him.
Yeah.
Like,
Riley's brother is Warren, and he's mm-hmm. like, he's into the girl Lisa, who is biracial and she's paralyzed because of the shooting. Mm-hmm. He's like, leave, like, Hassan's kid. What's his name? Ali. Oh, that's why they call him Aladdin.
Because yeah.
Prince Ali. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I didn't get the joke Ali, until... Mm-hmm. First of all, it's not an insult. Prince Aladdin is fucking awesome. No, it is an insult. But it's...
The animated version was fantastic.
Obviously, I'm talking about the animated version. Yes. We don't speak that garbage in this house.
We don't speak remakes of Disney animated series.
They're trash.
Trash. Nobody can replace Robin Williams.
Nobody ever.
Nobody.
So Warren is, like, clearly, like, the more open-minded, maybe because of, like, his loving parents, maybe mm-hmm. because of
his brother
mm-hmm. and, like, his understanding of his situation, maybe his relationship with God. You know, like, there's a lot of different reasons.
Oh, maybe,
you know,
also his feelings towards Lisa.
Maybe also his feelings towards Lisa. He's just very, you know, open, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And, again, there's a lot of... I don't even want to say underlying racism in this town. There's, like, just fucking full out racism. Right? Mm-hmm. And there's very, you know, oh, if you're not part of this church, you're, you know, garbage. If yeah. you don't believe in God, then you're garbage. If you're, you know, believe in another religion, you're garbage. Granted, the person who's saying that is never actually saying that. And that's mostly Bev Keane.
Yeah. Who's garbage yourself? But who you've noticed, though, like, most of the town either fears or dislikes.
Yes.
Right?
Because, so, as we later find out, because mm-hmm. of the issue with the oil spill, Joe, the town drunk, tells the sheriff, you know, she's the one who forced everyone to take the settlement from the oil companies, mm-hmm. even though like he knew it wouldn't be enough to cover
to maintain the town,
mm-hmm. to maintain their houses, to maintain their livelihoods. And because of that, she was like, well, I'm going to take the money for the pastor. And then you guys have to give me the money, or give the church the money, give the pastor the money, because he's not doing well. And then she essentially laundered the money for herself into this little rec center that she created on behalf of the Monsignor. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, people like this exist, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
They mm-hmm. 100% exist. You have the fucking bakers, Tammy Faye and all that shit, who launder money. There's like, there's so much of that in, let's face it, any church, any religion. You can pull up any religion right now on YouTube and hear like scandalous stories.
Of course.
Going all the way from like Catholics to Jehovah's Witnesses to you know, whatever.
That's the one Tom Cruise is in?
No. No, that's a Scientologist.
Scientologist, right. So that's different.
Right. But the, yeah, there's always something, right? There's always something.
Who's the one that Smallville chick was in?
Nexium? Well, that's a cult.
That's a cult. I know.
That's the actual cult.
That was sick.
That was fucked up. Like, again, there's a lot of correlation. And again, when Bev sort of takes over the church later on, when she's the one who kind of becomes the, I don't want to say the leader, but she's the one who like takes over for the priest when he's either sick or when he needs help kind of like getting away with something or whatever mm-hmm. the case is, you can definitely see the cult-ish aspects take over from there.
She is a master manipulator.
She is. Mm-hmm. Well, there's even, okay, so as we were watching the show, you find out about the situation with the priest. So should we tell them what the deal with the priest is? What do you think? Because if we want to talk...
Okay, we're almost at the hour mark, so...
You think we're safe?
This is the final...
This is the final warning yes. of full fucking spoilers for this show.
Yeah.
Okay?
So...
So the priest, who I appreciate that they don't... They don't spoil by giving his name.
Yeah, not even on IMDb.
Not even IMDb. Mm-hmm. Hamish Linklater is only listed as Father Paul mm-hmm. in this.
For now.
Give it a couple years. Maybe they'll mm-hmm. do it. He obviously plays he's the Monsignor as well. Yeah. So the old man who went on who was sent on a pilgrimage. So a
sabbatical pilgrimage. Yeah.
To the Holy Land. Mm-hmm. He didn't come back. Although Father Paul says the diocese sent me because the Monsignor is sick.
Sick, but he'll
Monsignor
be back.
John, I think his name is John.
He'll be back. He's just recovering.
Turns out Father Paul, Monsignor John, same person.
Which I love, by the way, that episode. I think it was the third episode.
It was the third episode, yeah.
He confesses. He goes to confession.
By himself.
And then they show. And it was very, like, clever. They do this, like, three-dimensional wooded carving flashback, right?
Yeah.
Of scenes. And then it goes to the actual
flashback. Like the stages of the cross. Wow. Yeah. Fucking patting myself on the back.
Well, you did go to Catholic school.
I did go to Catholic school for...
You weren't. We weren't as fortunate as you. We went to good old public school.
But the stages... Listen, it's coming into handy now. But yeah, the stages of the cross, right? So the 12 points, the pictures that are always like in churches, mm-hmm. especially carved. Around Easter time.
Carrying of the cross.
The carrying of the mm-hmm. cross, the whipping, the mm-hmm. and then finally the crucifixion. There's all...
And then the resurrection.
Right. And that's what mm-hmm. they're talking about here.
Because everything in the episode is going towards Easter.
Right. Well, the whole show is. Mm-hmm. The Midnight Mass culminates at Easter.
At Easter.
Fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Jesus Which I don't know. Christ. It's brilliant.
Quick little Easter egg. Multiple Easter eggs. Flanagan had put Midnight Mass books in multiple episodes or movies that he created.
I think I saw something like that. Because the idea had been floating around for a while.
It was in Hush.
Was it in Hush?
It was in Hush. And it was also in...
Hush is 2016, so that's a while back.
And it was in...
Was it in Gerald's Game?
I think it was earlier than 2016.
Hush?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And it was in Gerald's Game, yeah.
Was she reading a book called Hush? I mean, was she reading a book called Midnight Mass?
I don't know exactly. I think in Gerald's Game, she pulls it off the shelf behind her.
Oh, okay.
And I don't remember in Hush.
Hold on, I'm checking.
Double O's got to confirm.
2016. Hush. Okay. Suck it.
Bravissima. Hold on. Well, this is for me.
Yes.
Because I didn't know. And that's for her. So, yeah, I have to say, like, that whole scene where he's flashing back and the carvings, like, very well done. I mean, if you're going to do it right. Yeah.
As the story unfolds, like, you've...
First of all, who takes an old man with dementia into, like, the desert? Can I just say that? They wanted him to get lost in that stuff. They said he's, like, you know, I wouldn't put it past these people to do something like that.
Well, Bev, certainly. I wouldn't put it past anybody.
Yeah, I wonder if she said... She probably talked to somebody.
She's the one, I think, who collected for him. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bev... Oh, God. I can't... I don't even want to get into the topic of Bev because I feel like she is just... fucking awful. There's too many layers of despicable.
She is schifiel. That's disgusting.
She's in very broken Sicilian dialect.
Yeah. Oh, you want to know perfect Italian? Che schifo.
There you go. I am not. She's terrible.
Kudos to her though, man. Wow.
That actress. Now, don't get me wrong. Samantha
Soylent.
Yeah, my first.
Sloyan.
Yeah. My first introduction to Samantha Sloyan was from Hush, and never would have expected her, like, character who's in that movie for like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah. I was like, if that
to be as, like, amazing as she was in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, again, there's a lot of people in Hush that he reused for the show and all his shows.
Flanagan uses, like, everybody.
Yeah. It's like the reuses,
like, yeah. He's got his crew.
Yeah.
Like Sam Raimi had his crew.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Did he?
Yeah,
Bruce Campbell.
No, I'm sure there's other shows out there that, like, they have the... I keep thinking, like, about is Adam Sandler, but I'm like, that's not right.
Adam Sandler. Well, didn't Adam Sandler direct his own... Does he? No, he has somebody who does it for him.
I don't know if he's directed his own thing. I think he's a producer.
He's probably a producer, yeah. You know who reused a whole bunch of people who I just watched recently? The guy who did Demons 1 and 2. Like, everybody was the same cast. I just bought that on 4K.
Beautiful. Alex Esso.
Bellissimo. Alex Esso. Mm-hmm.
As Mildred Gunning, the old woman with dementia.
Oh. See, okay, that's...
I have a love affair with her, too, since Starry Eyes.
Oh, my God.
She's incredible on that.
Yeah, I did that on my paper for school.
Again, I hope this... I know it sucks, right? Because... I don't want to blame Squid Game, right? Like, the show seems awesome, right? And I get why.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it.
I think this country is, like, in desperate need for just really good fucking psychotic TV shows where there's no, like... I mean, there obviously is a political agenda in Squid Game.
I saw a lack of diversity in it.
You're stupid. But my point is, like, there's no, like... Please, thank you. But my point is, like, there's always this, like, oh, well, we have to, like, talk about this, or oh, we have to talk about that, and oh, it's left, and oh, it's right. And it's just like, this is what happens when people with too much power get too much power and the poor stay poor. Like, you want to talk about underlying? That's what Squid Game is.
I heard people already complaining about it.
Of course they are. Yeah. But, like,
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch it either. But going back to Midnight Mass. This show...
I heard Dave Chappelle's show is great.
I haven't watched it, but people are fucking flipping out left, right, and center. I don't care. So, something about this show. Mm-hmm. I think that people who are religious might hate Midnight Mass. Because it doesn't really...
It might portray them in a poor light, but time out. Like, not to step on your toes... I think people who are religious, we kind of grew up in this a little bit, but not nowhere to this extent.
I'm more in it, I think, than anyone else was because of my schooling.
Yeah. Unless you're like, I guess because maybe like the area we're in too, we don't really like go to it to this extent. But I mean, and I'm no longer as religious as I used to be. I was not offended to this, but I also appreciate art and movies and theaters and, you know, film. So I was not offended, but, you know, it's like, will church people really be bothered by this, or can they appreciate that this is just, hey, I'm mixing like religion and cult and vampirism. Yeah. You know,
again,
I haven't really seen like backlash yet, but I don't think that many people have watched it or it hasn't caught on yet.
I think it's one of those things that because Squid Game came out at the same time as this, or like a couple of days after this, there hasn't been time for backlash. And I think realistically, it's probably like just one of those things that eventually you're going to hear, you know, oh, religious groups are super mad of their portrayal of Catholics.
Yeah, and well, religious groups are don't super- worry. They won't take down. They're not going to take it down. So
they won't. They're like, yeah. This is money.
Dave Chappelle staying up, and that's got a way harsher
critique behind it.
Yeah, you got GLAAD going after you. Yeah, I don't think they give a shit about the church, the Catholic Church.
Yeah, they're not going to care either way.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, is it making us money? Then we're keeping it on.
Yeah, I think Mike Flanagan's got a good relationship with them. I don't foresee any type of.
Well, I also think. Mike Flanagan makes them money, right? Like every show has been a banger so far.
And I bought his last two seasons on physical media just because, you know, right now I get Netflix for free because of my phone contract. But I want those shows. I want
absolutely
even Bly Manor. Like I just so I can have.
Well, you even said it's not that you dislike it. Maybe it's the weakest of the three, but it's still not a bad show.
It's still not a bad show. Right. I still enjoy the. Gothic like horror noir of it, so
I'm
and I can always lend it to you. Oh wait, you have Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just this show is incredible, and we've been talking about this show for over an hour at this point,
mm-hmm.
and we really haven't gotten into heavy spoilers.
No,
the show has heavy themes, right? And
whoa, that's heavy.
We're going to use this every episode. I just think that for someone who grew up in the Catholic Church, seeing it from a perspective of like what it can do to a small community to have faith and what happens when people pervert that faith is really like it's something else. And if you're someone who's Catholic or was a Catholic or is thinking about becoming a Catholic or whatever the case is or going back to it or being born again or however it might be. I think something like this show is actually important to see because we so often want to twist and interpret events to make sense for ourselves. But sometimes it is what it is, you know? Like you shouldn't try to bastardize something to fit your perspective.
Well, I mean, you do see when Father Paul gets attacked. Well, he gets lost in the desert storm, so to speak.
Well, at that point, he's Monsignor John.
Well, he's Monsignor John, right. But
the 8-year-old dementia patient.
Or 8 years old or something. He ends up in the cave and the Nosferatu-like flying vampire, which, again, the design is phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Attacks him and drinks his blood. He sees him as an angel. And I'm not sure if he lets him feed on him because he thinks he's an angel. There's like, is this the first person this vampire has fed on in a long time? I don't believe that. I'm sure he's fed on. He looked pretty, you know, well nourished. But he lets Monsignor John feed on his blood after he calls him an angel. He sees him as an angel. And they make this arrangement to go back to the island together.
Yeah.
So he sees him as this angel. And that's where now we go into they made this agreement and he starts giving the blood to all the practitioners of the church and
without their knowledge. They take sacrament it happens, which I guess that makes sense. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Later, well, no. I mean, I knew that was the case, mm-hmm. but later on, Riley gets to tell. Well, I mean, we're
well, right. Well,
we're,
he's not. He's the only one of all the people going to church who has not drank any of the wine because his father has told him. Well, one, I don't want you to.
One, he's a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah,
that's one.
Oh, that's true.
Two, mm-hmm. he's like he doesn't believe anymore. So his father's like, it wouldn't be right if you haven't given confession. It wouldn't be. A right for you to take sacrament. Mm-hmm. So don't go up and take sacrament. And the only other person in the town, or the only other people in the town who don't really go in and take sacrament, are Annabeth Gish, the doctor, because she just doesn't go because her, like, her mom was religious, but she wasn't. And Joe, the town drunk.
There's a few other stragglers.
Yeah, but like those are the ones we focus on mostly.
Yeah, well, those other ones you don't even really see.
Yeah,
they come into play later,
much later,
in like the final two episodes.
Yeah, and but it makes sense. Riley doesn't drink because of the alcoholism. So later on, when he's attacked, you expect him to like die, just die, but then you see what happens. You see him being attacked by this vampire. Which, again, they never use the word vampire. They only use the word angel because, obviously, they don't see him as a vampire. Vampires in this universe don't exist. He's just an angel. Again, very clever use of the winged being, you know, coming down and saving the people of the town.
And they use the actual dialogue from the Bible.
Right. They use quotes from the Bible to justify. And again, this is what I was talking about, perversion of text, right? People who are extremists will use perversions of texts, of religious texts, and that's from any fucking religion, to bend and make it malleable to what they want to do, what they believe
in. Well, when Bev has the episode, has a, like, I think an argument with the sheriff, like, she talks about Jesus, and he's like, Jesus is in our Bible as well. You know, like, she's so, like, not... like, doesn't know anything else that he even has to...
She doesn't know anything about the Quran except that it's violent and this and that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's like, it's not, though. And we've read the Bible, whereas you've... Because I think the issue becomes the kids in the town are all given Bibles because of, like, the miracles going on.
Yeah.
Because everybody's expected to now, where...
Yeah, because he gets upset because he finds the Bible in his
son's... And now his son is interested in going to the church. But he's like... He's like, why is that okay? If I started handing out the Quran to the kids in the town, would you be all right with that? And she starts flipping out and saying no. Mm-hmm. But he's like, can you not see your own hypocrisy? And then every time Erin tries to speak up on behalf of the sheriff, Bev Keane interrupts her, and I just want to punch her in her fucking throat.
Yeah.
Well, praise to this actress, man, because I hated her guts. she's lovely, but...
She achieved what she was supposed to achieve. Fuck, that's good, man. Acting.
That's very good. She was awful, and I loved it.
But and as you see throughout the town, though, like by the drinking of the wine, everyone starts to heal, right? Or either heal, get younger.
So the other oldest person in the town who wasn't the Monsignor was the doctor's mom, right? Who's played by Alex Esso. Her name in the show is Mildred Gunning. She is also in her 80s. Dementia, losing it. The first time you see her, it's obviously she's much older. She's in old age makeup. And the first time I saw her, I was like, well, I know who Father Paul is. Which, again, and we were talking about this last time. There's a way where you can maybe be like, all right, this show's a little bit predictable, but it's so well done and so well made and so smart, and it gives you such like an intense feeling that it doesn't matter. Like, yes, because we are who we are and we tend to watch these movies and TV shows and like mysteries and can guess what the characters are, we could probably call from episode one that the father was the Monsignor, right? But there was a twist later on in the show that I didn't necessarily see coming, and I thought I should have.
Which one?
The Annabeth Gish one.
Oh, where she... that part.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have to say that.
Yeah.
That could just be... That could just stay...
That can
people
stay,
could see that themselves. Yeah, yeah. That's not a big deal.
But, there's really, like... I don't even know what to say. Watch the fucking show. Like,
yeah, watch the show.
Just watch it. It's such a... Again, even if you're not religious, right? Which, again, at this point in our lives, I don't think we necessarily are fully religious. Like, I still have my moments of, like, spirituality and things like that. But I think that a show like this where maybe it's just belief in, like, a community, in your community, and maybe being with the people around you instead of, like, focusing on, like, one person, right? A prophet, a... And in Bev Keane's case, a false prophet, right? Like, she's terrifying. And she's one of those people where it's like, God forbid this woman had any power. Mm-hmm. Which she eventually gets. Well,
she gets power, but like no matter what, as much as she's all, and this is one thing, like I guess we could talk about when the big event happens in
the church scene.
The church scene.
There's a lot of scenes that happen in the church, but if I'm talking about the church scene and you've seen the show, you know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Where everyone does what they do, right? She does not go through with it. And that, you know, where everybody's like,
she hides.
She hides.
She hides.
Yeah. So everyone.
Fucking bitch. Sorry.
Yeah. So for everyone, show your commitment, show your commitment, show your commitment. She cowers and hides. So she's not willing to drink the Kool-Aid, right?
So to speak.
So to speak. And hides. And it isn't until
Aaron
does a waxer. Yeah. And then she's resurrected, you know? And that's not much.
I mean, it's still kind of a spoiler, but
yeah, but like
you just see the scene. It's much more intense than that.
Yeah, it's way intense.
It's
you
way
know?
So in I'm fact, give you... it's such a Jim Jones situation that that's probably why Screen Rant like talked about it.
Yeah.
Because of the thing, I can't, I don't want to, yeah. But let's not just, even get into
yeah, yeah.
it.
But it just shows like for all her bravado and faith and higher power,
yeah,
and
God
prophet
and
God
wills
it. And if God wants it, so let it be. And what the church says, it has to happen.
Yeah, this bitch ain't doing it.
She ain't doing it. And even afterwards, when they go out and go after the people who were not committed, and the final scene happens where acceptance happens, right?
Acceptance, yeah.
Acceptance. She doesn't accept.
You'd think maybe she has a moment of it.
But like, she doesn't.
But she doesn't. Like the very last minute.
Till
the very end. Yeah.
She is not a believer. When true, like in the two moments where she's supposed to be a believer, she's not. She's the fraud.
Yeah.
She's a perfect, she in a way, she is the best written character of this show in terms of like antagonist, right? Mm-hmm. A villain.
Yeah, because I wouldn't even say that the priest is the intent. Like, yeah,
no,
he gets corrupted a little bit, maybe
he is
by
corrupted,
her too.
But he is not. He's not the antagonist.
He's not.
No,
he thinks he's genuinely doing.
He's
something
doing.
Good
he's genuinely
doing
good. And then when he has a moment of clarity where you find out something, and I won't spoil it, but he's really not the antagonist. He believes. Well, I mean, they say all good villains believe what they're doing is good. Thanos supposedly believed what he was doing was for the greater good, but it's in a way, it's not the same thing, yeah. Right? Not in this story.
Bev Keane is, fuck man, you're right. She is probably one of the better, like best written characters in the show. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are like maybe like points of like absence for certain characters because they only had 7 episodes and they couldn't delve maybe too much into it. But I do love the fact that they're focused on Bev Keane as a bad guy.
Yeah.
She's a fucking bad guy.
And I mean,
and she
what she does to him,
she's the most dangerous kind of bad guy,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because she believes she's God's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pointed out multiple times in the story. She truly believes that God will protect her no matter what because she is one of his favorites.
And when we say she doesn't believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
You pointed it out, and I'll use what you pointed out to me in terms of she even does something because she doesn't believe. As much as she calls the preacher a savior, a messiah, mm-hmm. She does something because she still doesn't believe it.
I think we could point out what she is.
Go ahead. You point this out to me because at first I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
I saw the scene afterwards and I didn't piece it together, but you pointed it out.
So a brief subplot with the story and then we'll get into it. There's the omens that the show talks about is that they wake up and the beach is covered with dead cats. Like fucking all the dead cats, right? And they're like, oh, there must be something killing the cats. So Bev takes what looks like, you know, turpentine or something like that.
Or rat poison.
Some
I think it was rat
sort of poison. Liquid poison. And she says like, oh, I'm going to just spread it around the town. Right. Mm-hmm. And the dog who's the dog of the town drunk Joe, she does not like this dog. Mm-hmm. And at the crock pot for the, you know, year to start, you know, the Easter happenings. Right. The dog dies. And
well, she puts it on a hot dog.
Does she put it on? I didn't even see it.
Yeah, she. He eats a hot dog and dies right after.
Oh wow. Okay.
So no. she purposely
poisoned the dog, right? But like, okay, we knew, like, even with that scene missing that I hadn't, that I didn't realize it happened. You know she's
stop playing on your phone while you're watching.
I wasn't. I swear to God, I just missed it. But no, that you know she's the one responsible, right? Yeah. And then later
well, now
on,
you really know.
Well, now so, you really know. Yeah. Now I really know. Mm-hmm. So the sheriff goes to talk to her, and she's like, "Oh, well, I'd be devastated if that, like, because she was playing it off so like, yeah, oh, well, I was putting it out, yeah, because of the thing with the cats, mm-hmm, and if I'm responsible, I'll just be devastated, right? Fucking lying bitch, mm-hmm, right? So she's later on. You see how the dog dies, and it's fucking terrible. I hate when they kill pets in the show. Like, humans, I'm like, whatever. But pets, it's so fucking sad, right? But you see him, like, convulsing, and you see him, like, pus and blood coming out of his throat, and it's fucking terrible. Later on, you know that Father Paul has been weak, but that's because he's running low on the vampire's blood, right?
Like, or he's been drinking too much of it, so maybe he's converting.
I don't know if it's that he's drinking too much of it. I think it's that he's running low and he's not getting his regular intake of it, mm-hmm, because he's like angry and calling for it to come back, and it hasn't come back yet.
Yeah, and he's able to communicate with the vampire,
right? So, and mm-hmm, he's waiting for it to come back, and it hasn't come back yet. He's running low, he's getting sick, he passes out, he does whatever. At some point, you find out there's a who Father Paul is, there's a picture of Monsignor John in the Monsignor's office of when he was young, and it's clearly Father Paul, right? You see Bev Keane looking at this picture before you know what the picture is, right? Mm-hmm. But in episode 3, when he's doing his confessional, the story of the entire episode is still being unfolded. And it's just kind of going back and forth between what happened to him in the Holy Land, in the cave, with the vampire. He walks into the room where Bev Keane, the mayor, the guy who works on the boats, I can't remember his name, and Bev Keane, the mayor's wife. Father Paul walks in and fucking drops and is coughing and is seizing and his eyes turning red and he's coughing up pus and blood. So he's having the same exact reaction as the dog did. And at first you're like, well, why the fuck isn't Bev Keane flipping out? Because she's like, she's been like obsessed with the Monsignor and Father since the start of this, right? Where's the Monsignor? That I'm, you know, like, she's like the teacher's pet who's like a little bit fucked in the head, right?
A little.
You found out way more. So then he comes back to life, right? He dies and then he resurrects.
And that's where she's a little...
And then she's like, oh, it's a miracle, right? Later on, either in the same episode or the next episode, you see her putting the cans away. And the implication is that she's the one who killed the father.
Yeah, you meant to think either, is she still continuing to put the poison out, or did she specifically poison him?
Mm-hmm. Like, you have to think that she specifically did it. Because at some point, like I said, you do see her looking at the picture on the wall, but you don't know what she's looking at until the end of episode 3. So there's a lot of like nuance there, right? Is she like, holy shit, this guy is the Monsignor? How is he so young? What is going on? Or does she just believe he's a false prophet? Mm-hmm. I need to kill him so our Monsignor can come back. What million other reasons she could possibly have?
Well, is he truly an angel? And if he's an angel, he'll be resurrected. I can't kill him. She doesn't believe,
right?
You know? So, and you know, she's also conniving. She's manipulative. So, and that just adds to the whole, like, she doesn't believe.
Yeah.
So she's, like I said, she's truly the best written character, I think. Villain.
Better,
you know?
Villains, yeah. And again, yeah, the preacher is not, the pastor, Father Paul, mm-hmm, isn't, his intention isn't to be like, I'm going to fucking turn everyone into vampires.
Yeah, he's in the classic sense of how villains are written, he's not a villain. He's not your typical villain. Yeah. If you were to compare him to someone like, let's say, a Thanos, who even in the movie, he's doing, you know, I'm doing what's good for the universe. I won't see what happened to my world happen to everyone else. I'll wipe out half the world instead of just go, oh, wait, I'm a god. Let me just make more for everybody. Yeah, if you really think about it. which is why it doesn't make sense in the movie. Whereas in the comic book, he wanted to please Death, who wanted half the universe wiped out. That's why the movie doesn't make sense.
Yeah. To be fair, that doesn't make sense either in the comic.
Well, yeah, she wanted half the world wiped out.
Why?
Because she's Death.
So what, people are going to die anyway?
No, because in the comic book, the population of the world was overflowing, and she's Death. So she needed to, like, curb the population. All right. So he's like, I can do this. She purposely resurrected him to accomplish it for her. Huh. Yeah. So then he was like, oh, I'll just get the gauntlet and wipe out half the universe. But he also had, like, I'll be her equal, and she'll love me, because she saw him as, like, a
lower being.
Yeah, you're a lower being.
Yeah, but then he becomes higher than her.
Yeah, so she still, like, denounces him, because it's like, no, you're too higher than me now.
Then doesn't he kill her?
No, he doesn't kill her. He captures all the gods, and then she turns on him to try to help everybody defeat him. What a bitch.
He's such an asshole.
But anyway. Which is why the movie doesn't make sense, because if he was a god, he could just create more for everybody. That's why Marvel's stupid.
Okay.
But
loved Marvel a couple years ago. He's just butthurt now. Speaking of Marvel, and I just want to bring this up because I feel real stupid sometimes.
Well, I'm butthurt because the butt plugs were big.
Okay. Go ahead. When we were talking about Black Widow, mm-hmm. Do you remember what I said about the little girl who played young Scarlett Johansson?
Do I remember what you said?
Yes. I was like, oh, the actress.
I don't remember.
I was like, oh, this actress. Yeah, I could see her as a young Scarlett Johansson. I said, I could more see her as a young Mila Jovovich. It's her daughter.
It's Mila Jovovich's daughter.
I'm a fucking idiot. I didn't even check. I didn't even check to see if that was her.
I'm rolling my eyes because she probably already knew.
No,
she's just doing this now.
No, I did. I swear to God, I was watching a What Culture video, and they were talking about.
Wait. You watch What Culture?
Yes. And they were.
They got good videos sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. And then when they make mistakes about, like, quotes and what kind of a movie Prince of Darkness is, Midnight Mass, vampire show. Prince of Darkness, not a vampire movie. Okay? Stupid. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. I remember when they did that.
Yeah.
What are they called Prince of Darkness a vampire movie.
Yes, they did.
How do you fuck that up? John Carpenter, get on that.
And are you confused because there was John Carpenter vampires? Anyway. But no, I was watching.
James Wood tells the priest, did I give you a chubby?
Yes.
Was James Wood just like making random jokes in that movie?
He had to have been. There's no way that was fucking scripted.
John Carpenter was probably just like, just James.
Whatever.
You think John Carpenter, like towards the end of his career, was just like high on set?
Maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah. Ghost of Mars is any indication.
I don't remember much about that movie. I know I saw it, but I don't remember.
Anyway, going back to that, I was just, because I was watching the video, they're like, oh, kids you didn't know were in, like, played younger versions of their relatives or of their parents. So in one of the Resident Evil movies, they show the little girl who plays Alice.
Right, is Mila Jovovich's daughter.
Mila Jovovich's daughter. And I'm looking at her and I'm like, oh, shit. And I just look up.
quick question. For what reason would there have to be a younger version of Alice in Resident Evil?
Because I think they use her model as the Red Queen in the thing. I don't fucking know. I haven't seen all the fucking Resident Evil movies. I don't care.
I just bit my tongue. I don't.
It's because you're going to say something stupid.
No, I'm just saying the Red Queen, I'm almost positive, was some random actress.
In the first one. But later on, they switch it to the young Mila Jovovich.
Which they modeled after her DNA.
Whatever.
They went, like, ballistically crazy with that shit, and I just don't know. And all I know now is that the new Resident Evil movie that's coming out looks like trash. First of all, Claire Redfield had no idea about, like, Umbrella, I'm pretty sure. And now she's, like, some conspiracy theorist trying to take it down.
They're remaking so many things. And don't get me wrong. I Know What You Did Last Summer wasn't exactly a masterpiece, right?
The dumpster fire now. Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. I don't even want... I'm like, never mind the Lost Boys. Mm-hmm. But like, I can't be bothered. So something happens at the end of the story of Midnight Mass. Let's get back to it for now. So something it's happens.
It's got like a Silent Hill feel to it at the end.
It's just, it's very, it's very creepy. It's very sad. It's very, there's literally, I don't even want to tell you, but something happens and the one of the characters' final words in the story harkens to like Lost Boys territory.
How much are we going to charge for this?
No. In terms of why when David is killed in the Lost Boys, Michael didn't turn back. Because there's like a bigger fish to fry.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. that bigger fish in the story is the vampire in this story mm-hmm. in Midnight Mass. So when I was talking to our nephew, he's like, I don't understand why that happened to that character. And I'm like, well, I said, maybe everything went back to normal because that the big bad vampire, you know.
Right. Maybe.
Maybe. So I mean, if you haven't guessed already, we recommend it.
Yeah.
This is actually the shortest of the three, by the way. I checked and Haunting of Hill House was 10 episodes. Bly Manor was 9. And then this was 7.
Mm-hmm. This didn't need more episodes.
No, no. It's fantastic. There actually is another show that he's doing now, Mike Flanagan, and it's 5 episodes.
Really?
And it's called The Midnight Club. And I thought it was something to do with this because of Midnight Mass. It is not.
What's it about?
It's, hold on. Hold on. I have it here.
Hold on. I need to see something. So you might hear something for a second. Why is this song in the movie? Right?
I don't know.
What a shitty song for this movie. Go ahead. Yeah. What's it about?
The Midnight Club follows a group of 5 terminally ill patients at Rotterdam home who begin to gather together at midnight to share scary stories.
So is it like a ghost story?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought originally it had 5 episodes. Now it says episode guide 10.
Oh, so now it's back to the most. Well, tied for the most.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they...
Maybe only 2 episodes were filmed so far. That's what I was confused about.
Yeah, but then how did you see 5?
The Fall of the House of Usher. That's interesting.
Another Flanagan?
Yeah. Fall of the House of Usher. Why do I know that?
You know, as much as I love his shows, can he give me like a movie too? Because I want to see...
His
like...
movies don't do that well. And no, his don't. Movies they are
bomb.
Great.
They bomb.
But they're great.
Fucking... And this is...
Oculus?
This is what I tell...
Hush?
Dr. Sleep?
I still haven't seen Dr. Sleep.
Well, you're to blame. You know, have you stared in the mirror?
Oh, did you ever Edgar Allan Poe.
Did you ever think you're the problem?
You know nobody likes you.
you're a bitch.
The Fall of the House of Usher. So, I'll punch you. Hold on.
Why would you punch me when I could just punch myself?
Because you're a bleeder. You got no endurance for pain.
It's a great movie.
Yes, it is. Yeah, Fall of the House of Usher is Edgar Allan Poe, which is cool.
As long as it's not fucking, as it's not John Cusack.
Oh God. Anyway,
I tried watching that movie.
Oh, please.
Did you ever see it?
I couldn't sit through it. I tried watching it once.
It was fucking terrible.
No, yeah. I was like 20 minutes in. I'm like,
oh wow.
I'm like, dude, we should have a snore.
Oh yeah. Hold on, but it's not a snoring. So this is what I would do to John Cusack though. Hold on.
Because you're a bleeder. You got no endurance for pain.
Terrible.
He was good in that movie with Nicolas Cage, though. He
Frozen played, Grounds?
Yeah, he played a good rapist.
And serial killer?
And serial killer, yeah. Does he... I don't know if he, like, rapes them and kills them or kills them and rapes them.
I think it was both, actually, the real-life story of it. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so watch this fucking show and go back and watch some Mike Flanagan movies. Mm-hmm. Buy them. I would have to say, of the movies, one of his most underrated... would have to be Absentia.
Absentia, I haven't seen. I know you told me about
it.
You
know, I'm just done with you, okay?
Hey, like out this, of curiosity, mm-hmm. did you watch the 30-minute Oculus thing that I keep telling
did
you to
Mike
watch?
Did Mike Flanagan do it? No,
yes.
So shut the fuck
Mike
up.
Mike Flanagan did do it.
Did he? It doesn't matter because I bought the movie, so I own it, and he got his money.
Yeah, but you still haven't watched it.
So, but it doesn't matter.
But you still haven't watched it, though.
But I supported him, and
but
I bought the movie.
But you still haven't watched it. Though
what's the one I was gonna say? It's the mad cow disease. Yeah, wait.
Hush was excellent. Gerald's Game was fucking excellent.
Hush is
excellent.
Not available on it, I think, because it's just
Hush
a
was on Netflix.
No, I mean like in terms of purchase.
Oh,
because I have a Mike Flanagan collection. Do you see that?
Isn't Gerald's Game a...
It's a Netflix thing, too.
No, but isn't it a Stephen King story?
Yes, it's a short story.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Gerald's Game.
Hit it. You fuck.
It's the only one.
The only one.
Okay. You haven't seen, like, what, five of his things?
No.
You haven't seen Bly Manor?
Yeah.
You haven't seen...
We're talking about movies.
His
success has been definitely way more with the TV shows than it has been with the movies. No?
You don't even have Netflix.
If you're Netflix.
Exactly. All right, you treasonous tramp.
I found him first.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you really?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I saw Hush before you did, just because I didn't know his name.
No. I saw Hush before you did.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, maybe you're right.
Fuck.
Well, his wife was hot, and if I had seen her,
I love her.
I would have, like, sorry
She's
before
my
you.
Girlfriend. You know what?
Ow.
Because you're a bleeder. You got no endurance for pain.
You deserve that.
Anyway. So,
watch the show. As always, guys, thanks for joining us.
Bye.